Welcome, everybody. I would like to welcome everybody to the November 7th, 2019 meeting of Energy and Environment Committee. Oh, is this the right?
Yeah. Energy and Environment.
Oh, it's following.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Confused. I'm very confused today. Bear with me. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And to call the roll, Mary Wara.
Here.
Lynn Eckert is absent. Jonathan Hepner is absent. Brian Walton.
Here.
Okay. And did I see the chairman?
Yes.
I'm here.
She's hiding. Oh, there she is.
In plain sight.
She's hiding it in a very visible place. All right.
Do you want me to make a motion for the minutes?
For minutes? Yes, please. I'll entertain.
I'll make a motion for the minutes.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
And review of the budget is next. And Amanda is here. Brian, are you okay if we...
Sure.
I'm just thinking of kids at home and so forth. Thank you. I have two things on my mind, but I'd first like to entertain, thank you, if anybody has any concerns about or questions about the budget for the Department of the Environment. Oh, but I guess first, Amanda, do you want to just give a quick overview of what the differences are between last year and this year?
So in some ways it's very similar, and there are some substantive differences. And the main one being that we're looking at an additional staff position in the 2020 budget, and that is for a senior environmental resource technician. Currently we have a staff of four, myself, a deputy, an environmental resource technician, and our environmental planner. The environmental planner works solely through a grant that we have with Cornell Cooperative Extension on flood mitigation planning in west of Hudson watershed towns, meaning Shandaken, Olive, and Stock, and to some minor extent, Hardenburg and Denning. That's a pretty prescribed work program for that person. So there's really three of us who are kind of doing more of the rest of the county work. And that covers, as you all know, things like MS4 stormwater, so regulatory stormwater programs, as well as coordination with watershed groups, lower SOFIS watershed work, as well as all the energy planning, climate action planning, sustainability, all the other things we do. So an additional position, which was in the county executive's proposed budget, would allow us to keep in-house some of the work related to a DEC grant on resilience planning for municipal government operations, as well as providing some support to a project with the lower SOFIS for watershed plan that we have coming up. So that's the most, that's staffing when you only have a department of four and you're adding a position, mm-hmm. That's kind of a big percentage. But again, we have the grant with CCE, we have some state aid grants coming in for like the resilience project with the DEC, some other NYSERDA studies that we handle, so that's revenue in and then expense out. And then the other notable thing this year is that it's the first year of the Green Revolving Fund. This is a way of kind of taking credit for some of the energy savings, cost savings of different projects that we've implemented over the past couple of years. We use a special software package to document that savings. And so that is now, we have kind of like a seed fund that we're calling the Green Reserve Fund. And that was funded in this year's budget. And that will allow us to do some particular kind of incremental contribution towards some kind of energy conservation study or implementation project.
Is that
how
separate
much is
fund?
That in what
Sorry. Is that a separate fund somewhere?
So that's
the budget?
Why there is, there's a $50,000 appropriation from reserves. So that's unallocated funds that are in our budget as revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's $50,000 towards professional services. But
so that's considered the green fund, that 50?
Yes. Yeah. And it's unusual to see that $50,000 in from reserves
right.
in a departmental budget, so I wanted to highlight that for
yes.
you.
Because you have a significant downturn in the professional services and miscellaneous contractual
right.
expenses.
And that varies significantly year to year depending on
okay,
what grant we're handling. The one year it was very high, up over $200,000, but we received
right.
a DC grant that actually we were passing through to OCRA. So that comes, because we were subcontracting with OCRA, it comes to us as revenue, it gets shown as a professional services contract, but we're really just in the middle of that transaction.
That was from last year.
And that wasn't the professional
this year.
That
one,
was
or
this year.
This year.
The year that you said it was high.
Well, which was this year. Well, on miscellaneous.
$311,000.
There's two.
Right. So that.
Both the professional services line and the miscellaneous contractual expenses line.
Yeah, they're combined.
Down.
The one year it was the BYO bag campaign. There's $50,000 for that. The $50,000 amendment last year, so there was some additional money that came in there as well.
Can you talk through those two lines, the professional services line and the 4,600 miscellaneous congressional expenses, and tell us what the makeup is of those two lines?
So you just said
4,300 and 4,600. I'm actually also interested in the other equipment line, that 2,300, but we can start with the contractual.
All the 4,600 lines. Okay. And then you said 4,300 professional services.
Right. Yep, that's right.
Okay. So right now, the kinds of things that are under, let's start with 4,300.
Okay.
So that is things like training for stormwater MS4 training for staff in 2020. We have new staff that we need to send to a training series around stormwater.
And what's the cost of that?
That's at least $1,500. There's $10,000 for the Green Jobs Academy, $50,000 for the Green Reserve Fund.
Say that again? I didn't hear. 50.
Okay. $7,500 for the DEC Resilience Grant. That's in a professional services line that's tied to that grant. $40,000 for the NYSERDA Transit Study. That's for the fleet electrification. And again, that's balanced with revenue. We have some expenses that are under, that's a different line. So now we're already in a different line.
Yeah, that pretty much comes close to 111. And then what about 4,600?
4,600. $75 for a New York State EMC membership, $150 in other department subscriptions, $3,400 in grant, a contractual, under our grant contract with CCE, we have certain money in there for printing and things like that.
What was the number of that for?
$3,400.
$3,400.
$2,000 for other departmental printing. we have to send out. $10,000 for carbon credits. And again, $2,500 in the DEC Resilience Grant. $4,000 in electric vehicle charging stations. Again, that would be balanced with reimbursement through the Charge Ready New York program. $5,000 for fish stocking. $50,000 for the stage 3 geothermal investigation for this building.
Mm.
What fish stocking?
That's the big ticket.
And $9,000 for RECs. That is the
renewable
energy credits. Certificates.
Are there bound copies of the budget available?
I don't want to get into the weeds on this.
There should have been one in your box.
There wasn't.
Because it's in my brain. On the carbon credits and the RECs, can you provide the backup detail for that?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of where we're actually buying those RECs. Like I have long found it incredible that we could offset all our energy expenses with $15,000 buy, which means basically my personal expenses could be offset, you know, by a couple $100. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
they're all green E certified.
My understanding is that it's a special municipal program.
Okay.
It's not available to residences or businesses.
I know.
Not at that.
At that
you're
price.
Not buying megawatt hours, basically.
Yeah.
Which is much different than a TerraPass or something like that. That's trying to.
Yeah. Again, we don't have to get into the weeds. I just every year I remind myself I want to do my own due diligence and deeper research on it because I just
waste me.
I find it highly suspect. Not that you're doing anything wrong. But just the bigger picture
of EV
credit of these
right. And the RECs, that's pretty standard. And that's pretty easy. Like if you go to something like EPA Green Power, they're tracking the markets on that all the time. And so our prices are what we get after we go out for quotes are all fall right in line with EPA Green Power Partnership. The carbon credits, we always get a third party verified credit, CAR or Green E verified credit for that same thing. That not only does the project, it has to have additionality, it has to be verified. There are all standards to it that you're kind of, when you go through one of these third parties, you're paying for their verification.
So that's I guess just what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
And it's for my own again.
Yeah. So and our standard is always that it's either Green E or CAR certified.
Okay.
And those are the I would call them the two standards. Then within them, you know, there's a variety of especially for carbon credits, the prices can vary significantly, whether you're tending towards the more industrial side or you're doing something like, you know, which is a more like romantic version, which is like, you know, planting trees on a hillside in some, you know, developing nation, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's a fairly large price discrepancy when you start
depending on what you're actually purchasing.
Right.
But
landfill gas on one side, like capturing landfill gas on one side to the planting trees in.
Right.
Wherever on the other
domestic or
abroad. Maybe, and I'm assuming it also includes how we arrived at what our numbers are that we need to offset.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's like fundamental. Like that's the greenhouse gas accounting,
mm-hmm.
and that's between the benchmarking report and the green fleet report that hits it on the head each year. That we know exactly what we're emitting.
Right,
and then we track that, and part of it with RECs too is that like things like over the last 10 years the grid has gotten cleaner, and so we're, you know, just the normal mix of energy has gotten cleaner. It's probably going to go back up once, you know, frankly, Indian Point comes offline. It's going to get a little dirtier in this area, but that's also one of the benefits that we've seen as far as a trend of our emissions reducing.
Someone else can go, but I do have one
question. May I, and then I'll come back to you. I want to understand the relationship between the attributes that we earn from our own solar projects and RECs. In other words, do we get RECs?
Yes.
We definitely, any of the deals that we enter into, the agreements like for the solar project, it is very important for us that we retain the rights to those environmental attributes.
That's what I was asking.
Which is actually changing in New York State. So if you're, as a government or an institution or an individual, if you buy into a CDG, Community Distributed Generation Project, you do not get the environmental attributes of that energy being produced. You get the discount on your bill, but you don't necessarily get the environmental attributes. Those are kept by NYSERDA. So it's something you have to look at the fine print of any contract that you enter into and make sure that if it's important to you to be saying, or the organization to be making a green power claim, that you retain those environmental attributes. So with the solar landfill, the contract that Mark negotiated, we keep the attributes.
Great.
That's all. Next week, we're working on the web-ready version of the climate action plan.
Yeah.
But all the accounting that you're asking for right now is all in the greenhouse gas emissions inventory about exactly how we get through, how we deduct, you know, the landfill solar project from the total energy use, and how we come to the numbers, and then we buy the offsets and the RECs. So that's all detailed in here.
That's great.
Okay.
My other question is, can you talk a little bit about what the new person in the department's going to be doing?
Right. So the vision there is to, we have a grant with the DEC to do a resilience plan for county government operations and infrastructure.
Thank you.
So that's thinking about the next
much.
Step from this climate action plan. So the climate action plan looks at operations, buildings, transit, and fleet, about how to reduce emissions. Mitigation looks more at vulnerability of infrastructure or buildings or roads, bridges, highways to climate change. We're starting some of that work already with our grant this year with the estuary program with DEC to look at culverts and their ability to pass larger and larger storm events and how well they're sized, so that we can start to prioritize and have a management plan for culvert infrastructure. And from that, we'll be looking more culverts, bridges, roads, buildings, heat, snow load, different things that we're expecting to see. So how can we kind of incorporate that into any planning? So we'll be doing that resilience plan. And then the intent is, because we have to look at, kind of like the hydrology across the county, the infrastructure across the county, we'll have a framework to help the towns as far as looking at their buildings, their culverts, and we're already going to be piloting some of this work with the towns of Woodstock, Town of Kingston, and Starbucks, that will then provide that information to the towns and encourage them to do a similar planning process. So we have a grant from DEC to do that. So a large, let's say two-thirds or more, three-quarters of that person's time would be devoted to those activities around that grant. We're going to see, we budgeted $42,000 in revenue from that grant in 2020, and we'll be budgeting the remainder, which is another $42,000 for revenue in 2021. So we have kind of 2 years of salary planned out through that grant, and then a small amount of money towards the lower SoDistrict management plan process.
Okay.
So between that, we cover the salary.
I have a question that relates to all of the environmental legislation that's been passed recently, you know, starting back with styrofoam and, you know, coming up to the bring your own bag and the straws and other plastic, and if the food waste, large generator food waste law passes, it seems to me that we're probably getting to the point where it makes sense to have an environmental compliance officer. And I just, I guess, let me just back up and say, I'm concerned with how all of these additional responsibilities are going to impact your department. And, you know, see if, my thought is that it makes sense to have, not to have to worry about which department is the best place to tuck, particularly the compliance component of, and I expect there's going to be more legislation. Let's first let Amanda answer and then go ahead.
Do you want me to say something?
Yeah, well,
I mean, because it's multi-department, right. So I get where you're going, but like two out of the three things that you named are really going to fall on the health department because they're the ones that deal with restaurants. And even if you added one compliance position in a county the size of the state of Rhode Island, it's been said a million times, it would be impossible for that person to get to every location even throughout the year, I believe. So the way it is now, the engineers, the sanitary engineers, those working in the restaurants while they're there, check for styrofoam, and they will now check for straws and condiments and other things while they're already doing their health-related checks. Now, as far as the plastic bags, starting in March, the Department of the Environment will no longer be doing compliance with the plastic bags.
Right. And, you know, that was, again, in the law, it didn't say which department. The previous county executive, you know, there was discussion here. It was decided that it went to Environment. Maybe we had budget to go along with that. But that was, I think it went very well. Over the summer for the BYO bag, but it was a serious allocation of staff time to make sure that that did go well. And I think any of these things take some concerted effort to get the word out.
So if it's not going to reside in an Environment, but the law still exists, do we know where
as far as which environment you mean
in particular the plastic bags for
the
now
the state law says that
it's reversed it's our law our law has reversed preemption,
yeah.
So our law, the county BYO bag law, states that the day another law comes into effect,
okay,
our law goes away,
but there are aspects of our law that right now are still and will still be in place, but that remains to be. So, can I speak?
Go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, I, it's perfect that I went after you because I was going to say, I mean, I was going to agree largely with Vanna, except not on this, in terms of the man person power, but not on the subject of compliance, but more education. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of what you did so well, which took a lot of mm-hmm. people hours on plastic bags, had to do with education,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, FaceTime and getting out there and getting people,
right.
And then following up,
yep.
on people who weren't compliant,
yep.
because in those beginning weeks, it, you know, it was a rush, and you and I had a lot of back and
yep.
forths. But between the executive's initiative, you know, in terms of the environmental goals, and this legislature and this committee in particular, which has been pretty aggressive and continues
mm-hmm.
to be pretty aggressive, I think rightfully, with environmental goals. I'm continually impressed by what you're able to leverage with a tiny mm-hmm. the department. And we've said this, I mean, this is now the easily the sixth budget cycle in a row where I've said I could fully support an additional person to your department that wasn't funded from a grant, that mm-hmm. didn't have a specific job, because there's so much to do mm-hmm. and be done. And I know that no one in your department would sit idle, like that we wouldn't mm-hmm. send someone to your department and you'd say, oh great, now someone can make me cupcakes, you know, it's like that. There's so much to do and be done, mm-hmm. and it can always be done better and more. And another touch, another connection, even back to what we budgeted for through Legislator Green's initiative with the green business, just if that were to be taken on as a county initiative, you know, just there's mm-hmm. so much. So I don't know that it's going to happen, the discussion's going to happen right now around this table, but I refer back, and you were there for that conversation, I want to say it was 2 years ago, when legislators Green and Heppner proposed an additional person, and the tenor of the conversation became about the description that was written, mm-hmm. and I very much wanted to change the conversation to be a conversation about what would you do mm-hmm. with an additional person, what could an additional person allow you to do, and I still want to have that conversation. I want to have that conversation every year about this department. And when we talk as a legislative body in terms of policy initiatives and things, I mean, certainly at this committee, we've moved a lot of policy initiatives mm-hmm. that we as policymakers could say, we need more resources mm-hmm. here. I know this is not for you to say because your budget's approved for the executive, but I think we, the legislature, need to talk about This is a department where I would like to have the conversation about prioritizing. It doesn't have to fully happen tonight. I know everybody's really tired, but I'm putting it on the table.
Well, but in terms of the budget, mm-hmm. You know, having the conversation, unless we do a budget amendment for 2020 in 2020, which...
No, I mean in this budget cycle.
In this budget cycle.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I see two components. One is compliance, one is education, and one is compliance. And if the food waste composting law gets passed, it's up to the county executive. The way it's written, it's up to the county executive how it gets implemented. But it's going to put additional pressure somewhere. And in that particular case, I know that the agency has already agreed to do some of the generic education about food waste composting, but absolutely not, you know, they're not going to, the way the law's written, they would not do the compliance. So it seems to me at some point it might make sense to have somebody who has the skills, who knows those laws, and, you know, can work in a way that's fair with the appropriate warnings that are written in to the various bills.
Just one note on really the compliance aspect of it. We are not set up in our department to basically handle any receipt of money. And it's one of the things that being a small department without any administrative staff, that it opens up a whole other level of kind of internal controls and procedures and oversight. Also, the health department that does compliance has to have, administrative, contracts for hearing officers and,
yes.
There's many, many layers of kind of contractual and legal that go on top of that for even small hearings. And that's not something that we have in kind of our domain at all. And that would, I think it's a pretty, it's not a judicious use of resources to try to then create that in something like Department of the Environment.
I just really want to plan for it.
We get to designate a department, we're just going to designate the clerk of the county legislature.
I'm sure Victoria will be there.
All right.
But it's there's an administrative burden there's an administrative burden that comes along with that, and also what it opens, you know, additional procedures, controls, things like that, that are,
And maybe this would be the last, just looking at the agenda, last point on this.
But to follow up on that, I mean, you know, I certainly have intentions of putting in more environmental policies and laws. I think, you know, this county could really be moving forward more quickly on zero waste action. We have our law and the pending state law as doing composting, and not only is that going to require compliance, but it's also going to require inventorying and nurturing an infrastructure, and I'm not quite sure if we have that, at least not at this point. You know, if there is a catastrophic failure of the RRA composting facility, we would have to make sure that other outlying facilities could handle that. So I really think we need to look at doing more in your department, or I don't know which department you would put it in, because essentially they do have ongoing revolving non-competitive funding for composting and recycling education at 50%. So, you know, and you're looking at, you know, bring your own bag laws, that's going to be changing slightly. You know, we're going to be looking at more durables. I would love to, if we can't get the stores to stop bringing in clamshells and other types of non-recyclable plastic, to keep that out of the county. So, I mean, we should really be looking at a means to do the education outreach and the compliance. The health department had told us at our meeting that they're essentially losing, through retirement, three critical personnel people with like 100 years, if you look at 33 years of experience, you know, and so to continue to put the burden of environmental enforcement on them is going to be a bit much too. So I think we should keep it all open for discussion.
Okay. Anybody else? I just want to change departments and just ask if Mark would clarify for us, as we talked in the hall, but just for the committee, what was to be the Green Business Coordinator.
Right.
Would you explain that?
So last time we met, we discussed taking one of the business services administrators and having that be part of their tasks. In the meantime, since that discussion, a new department was created. We talked about that in the last committee. Now, the current thought is to have the deputy director take on some of economic development, take on those tasks and have that as part of their position, and have that really, that other business services administrator, focus on current businesses, retention and expansion. And then the deputy will focus on both strategy with the director, but also part of this Green Business Challenge. Because I think we talked 2 to 3 days a week somewhere.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, if I'm not mistaken, 30 hours. And, you know, real proactive outreach is, I think, what's needed and what was intended by the budget amendment. So I just want to be sure that...
That's how it currently is. If it turns out that, you know, the legislative body decides to add a full-time position to environment that has to do with education and outreach, then we'll have to take a second look at it, because maybe it makes more sense to be there.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
Just a quick thing is that I would like to have municipalities that are not yet climate smart communities have a contact point in the Department of Environment, and I'm wondering if the new environmental research tech might fit with that job description, because it would help those communities with their mitigation efforts if they were connected into climate smart community networks
that hadn't or had passed
that haven't.
Haven't.
Yeah, but also the ones that have.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good, yeah, it's both.
But
I have some of each in my district.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't
gonna work on that.
Europa from Clean Energy Communities, the way the system is set up?
There's new funding, a new contract being executed by the DEC Office of Climate Change to hire coordinators just for the Climate Smart Communities program.
Yes.
Okay.
So we can help funnel them to the right folks there.
Okay.
So.
Good. All right. I think... thank you very much. It's been a helpful discussion. Any other questions? We'll take a quick update, unless there's a lot more than, you know, whatever you would like to share with us, Tim, in terms of the RRA.
It's
not budget, but just any update. So I want to be able to let you go so that we can get through the rest of the agenda.
Yeah, I'll be really, really quick. Just got back from a NYSAR conference. For those of you who don't know, NYSAR is New York State Association for to Reduce, Reuse, and Recycling. They hold an annual conference in Cooperstown every year. It's always very good to attend. The seminars are phenomenal. If you're into that, if you're into recycling, I was very happy this year because two of the board members attended. I know when Dave was a board member, he attended this Hagenbar.
At least talk about it, but never told you that.
I love it. I really encourage board members to attend these conferences because the things that I talk about in board meetings and the staff talk about in board meetings, it's always nice to hear those same things from other professionals in the field. Those two board members were Joanne Myers and they got a lot out of it. So we had a lot of good discussions. And they got to meet a lot of people. One thing that Fawn brought up, and it was the local solid waste management plan and the procedure, where it goes next. Right now, we're at public comment, so feel free to take a look at our website. You'll see the plan on there. We will be having a public hearing. The way it works, it has to be out for public comment for 45 days. And DEC wants a public hearing somewhere in the middle of that. So the board of directors scheduled a public comment, a public hearing for November 18th at 7 o'clock. Our regular board meeting is going to be at 5:30, and the hearing will be at 7. And the 45 days ends on December 11th. And the way it works is once that's done, those comments, the public comments are put together and addressed within the plan if the board sees it fit. And then it goes to DEC, and DEC wants to review the public comments and make sure that their comments have already been addressed because they've already seen the plan. And then they send it back with an approval letter. And then the final step is to go to the legislature for ratification. Yes?
Can I ask a question on that? Just did they redline any of the changes that were suggested by the working group? And I know he was working on making adjustments.
We have red line copy. I thought I sent it to you, but I'll send it again.
Yeah.
I only sent it to Tracy and Manna.
Thank you.
But I can send it to anybody else who wants to see it. You want it, Laura?
I think definitely the Solid Waste Planning Commission and Laura.
Oversight too.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's everybody.
I didn't raise my
hand. If you want, this is a quick paragraph. I'll just read what DEC wrote. They sent me an email in regard to the plan. And after the comment period is over on December 11th, it says, this is coming right from DEC, the plan should come to DEC first. We will review it, make sure that our previous comments were addressed, and that the comments from the public were summarized and given a response. Once we determine it meets all requirements of the regulations, we will then send an approvable letter to UCRA requesting that the resolution for adoption that the resolution be adopted by the legislature. That was this word for word.
When they say address the comments, do they mean that the RRA is supposed to address the comments in a separate document, or are you going to amend the plan to adopt the comments?
I think it would probably be either. And they want to see the public comments. They want to see what our response is, which we'll be working with the consultant. And then the last step is to go to the legislature for ratification.
Okay.
So I think that the DEC's usual process is to address those in a separate document and to indicate then where there would be changes. So it's either, you know, noted.
DEC's going to want probably the board to want ultra time to address the comments.
No, that's what I mean. But I mean, we should follow the format that DEC usually use on their own documents is what I would suggest, because bureaucracies like that.
Right. So, if the comment period ends on the 11th, then the board and our consultant will address those comments and send it back to DEC. And then if they're satisfied with that, then they'll send us an approvable letter. And again, then it goes to the legislature for a final blessing. So hopefully, maybe we'll get this done. I don't know how long. December 11th, probably by the end of December, we should have the public comments address. Get it to DEC maybe around the first of the year, and then I don't know how long DEC is going to take. Hopefully, we can do it in a few weeks. The good thing is they've already seen the document several times. It's gone through several iterations, so they're on top of it. So maybe it might come to the legislature. I don't know about the January meeting, but maybe the February meeting, and then we can finalize it.
I think the one, you know, we've had a Solid Waste Planning Commission to process things, and there were comments submitted, and they wanted to see the red line document to see how their comments were addressed. And the one other thing I just want to mention, which I think is a real step in the right direction, I think there was a general consensus that there was a lot of attention to the technologies that deal with the residual waste, but not as much attention to the prevention strategies. Not that they weren't addressed at all, but I think there was a feeling that we wanted to see a more explicit plan for diverting waste and maybe exceeding the goals that are set in the plan. And at the last UCRA meeting, an amendment was made to the goals to have the first goal not just say to reduce waste, but actually to move towards zero waste. So I think that a really good strategy would be, once the comments are incorporated, if the legislature so agrees, that the plan is passed and we create a supplementary document that is a roadmap to zero waste. So, you know, we had talked about that. We will have one opportunity to reconvene the Solid Waste Planning Commission. We haven't figured out yet when. And maybe what folks want to do is encourage the Solid Waste Planning Commission to come to the public hearing and have a listen to what is said there. But I think we have a workable strategy, and so that's sort of also that Solid Waste Planning Commission update. check that off our list. But anybody have any concerns about that?
I just think that public hearing is the same day as our last session.
Same day as?
Our session.
As session. Ooh.
No,
session
is the 19th.
Yeah, this is a Monday.
Oh, okay.
Monday the 18th.
Yes, that's right. It's a Monday. Yeah.
Okay.
Is the draft document posted online so that if we send out notice about
November 18th.
Yep, right.
I thought you said December 18th.
Okay. With that, I think, thank you, Tim. Unless you have something else, we can move to the resolutions. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
All right.
One, years ago when, you know, organizations, agency that came to report to you came in, that they submit a monthly report, and we used to get a breakdown of leachate and MSW and recycling. I mean, has this committee decided they don't want that information?
I think it's an oversight on my part because I go to so many of the UCRR meetings. I get to see that. But I'm sure that if we request that, their meetings are, you know, they just had a meeting, and Tim could easily provide that information. So, you know, maybe just to make that request, that that be part of his report, since it's easily available.
In the packet? Yeah. Packet at the RA meeting?
Yes, they used to bring them to these meetings.
We get them emailed, don't we, with their agenda?
We may get it with their agenda, but we could include it in your...
It's included in the emails that we get from them.
Yep. All right. Ready to move to the resolutions. Resolution 416, establishing a policy for consideration of solar arrays on all new or renovated replaced roofs on Ulster County buildings. We had a discussion in Public Works, and I think we came to a consensus.
Move.
Oh. Second.
Brian moved. Okay. Any comments on this policy?
They already do, don't they? Doesn't Amanda usually do an evaluation?
We do. I mean, we look at whether our public works staff currently does this. This policy would require us to have an engineer do a feasibility study. What I recommended, and then if there's a feasibility study, they move on to more of a structural analysis. One thing I recommended last night at Public Works is that if we do this, we should potentially also put money in as a budget amendment and just do one RFP and have all of the 43 roofs done all at once, so we have some kind of economies of scale, and then they can just identify quickly anything that's not doable, and then we would have a list of properties that when we replace the roof, we know that we need to make it to where they have solar.
Or at least do a deeper dive. Yeah. Because Legislator Litz distinguished between a feasibility study and a full
structural analysis.
Structural engineering study. So we have a motion on the floor. All in favor? Resolution number 416. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
Two in favor, two against.
On the basis, do you want to say anything about?
No.
Well, I don't think that putting the additional money into this and the roof, things don't always come out being as much as we're doing, like the solar farms and different, you know, I think that's a better place to be investing our money than in something, you know, it doesn't, I get it, but I also think with the roof things, there's a shorter lifespan than some other options.
I tend to agree with you, but did find that this was a compromise because we could, I think, for a relatively small amount of money, identify roofs where it might make sense and the ones that don't, and then know, you know, have some data to guide us. But thank you.
So what we'll have to do now is every time a new roof is on, we'll have to get a feasibility study done. So we'll be piecemealing it together.
And she did. So it was 2-2.
I didn't count votes correctly. You're not a member of this committee.
No.
Right.
Okay, well, we'll see if there's another way to address this. Let's see. Resolution number 444, adopting proposed law, local law number 5 of 2019, a local law amending the Code of Ulster to include mandatory food scraps composting by large generators. We've been talking about this for about a year, and I think we've addressed almost all of the concerns.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Moved, I'm sorry. By Legislator Warrow, seconded by Legislator Waltman. Any discussion?
How did we end up dealing with the health providers? That was one of the public comments that we had got.
We had a meeting with the healthcare providers. Dr. Smith was there, and four of the 10 facilities showed up. The others were all called individually and invited. And I think the general consensus from the four that showed up was they were really appreciative to be included. There was no legal barrier to proceeding. I encouraged them to check with their own attorneys and also their business managers, because there were questions about costs, and to please get back to us if there were any concerns. And so I think that went really well. And prior to that, we had a larger stakeholder meeting. Yes.
Are they all in the, or are they spread across the tiers in terms of the 10 health providers, or are they clustered in, are any of them going to be in this first tier, or will they be in the coming up
tiers?
Yes,
there were a couple that would be in the first tier, and they were appreciative to be alerted. It doesn't actually, the enforcement wouldn't start till the end of April. And
they thought they could comply.
Pardon?
They thought they could comply by
April? Yeah. It was new information to them, and I would say that they were really glad to know that this might be coming. And, the other thing is that there are healthcare facilities that are already participating on a voluntary basis, so they have some experience, and we can help create a peer match. But really did not hear any strong objection. Was any, who else was there at the meeting with the healthcare? Okay. Then you'll have to take my word for it.
Sounds encouraging.
I think we have audio, right?
They had the public meeting where they could have brought those concerns more forcefully, so it seems satisfying to me.
Yeah. Where do we wind up with the schools?
There was no legal issue about the schools. That was the only concern. The schools have regulations, as healthcare facilities do, about how they have to handle waste, and I think you looked into that.
Yeah, I know the county attorney raised some issues. I've looked into it. I'm going to be preparing a memo over the next few days explaining, evaluating their concerns. But the bottom line is the issues of preemption in terms of specifically for the schools and the health. The bottom line is when the state preempts a field, you can still collaterally regulate, like for instance, mining. Or fracking. You could, a town can ban that out as a matter of zoning without saying that's a regulation of mining or fracking. And this is sort of the same. We're not regulating schools because we're asking them to handle their garbage differently. So I just end up not finding that persuasive.
But but the state does not include schools?
No.
Correct?
No. The state does not.
Policy considerations, not legal barrier. I mean, right.
Yeah. The state does not include schools or healthcare facilities for whatever reason. I could try to guess some of the reasons, but yeah.
If I could make one comment, because council brought it up, and I just want to expand. It wasn't the county attorney's office believes that this is part of, that it's completely preempted, not just the school or hospitals, but because certain municipalities were exempted from the state law, they believe that this, that the statement to completely field preempt this, and they've given an opinion that, that it's preempted. So I just wanted to put that out.
Yeah.
I know you, I know council disagrees, but well, I just, not everybody was aware of the county attorney's opinion.
Yeah, I'll be right. I'll be explaining that in writing.
Okay.
Could I ask a question that might help us get around that, if that is true, which is if they, the initial state action did allow certain municipalities to come to adopt their own laws, could we go to them to get that for Ulster County?
I don't think that they allowed, they preempted New York City completely. I don't think they allowed them to do their own laws. They preempted New York City from being...
They allowed New York City.
Oh, they allowed them to do their own laws.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I mean, yeah, but that would require an action of the state.
You can always go to the legislature and get a law. And
yeah.
And
a home rule request.
Right, right. So that's a backstop if we come to believe that the county attorney's opinion prevails here.
You'd have to do that first.
At this point,
you have to do a home rule request and then...
Right,
right.
Right. So it's going to be important to see documents maybe from both attorneys.
I'll have it fairly soon.
I, you know, this is one of the situations where they didn't say yes and they didn't say no. They said New York City can. They didn't say other municipalities can't, and they didn't enable other municipalities.
Right.
So
but this is a technical legal issue that we need the briefs on, because what you said doesn't address what Deputy Ryder said. But when a state writes a law in a certain way, it can have an impact that doesn't fit with what you were just saying. That is not in what the situation with New York State. The claim is apparently from the county attorney that in a situation where you call out specifically New York City and you don't call out anybody else, you are saying everybody else is more tightly in than if you didn't call out anybody. And I'm not saying that I agree with that position, but I would rather hear from the attorneys on it than us. Same situation we had the other evening, where we're talking about a legal issue and it, we're not attorneys for the most part.
Chair,
well, these two are, and that's why I asked them for their briefs. But
yeah.
The rest
well,
of us.
Mark isn't the one who made the brief.
It's not my
no,
brief.
But it's Bernie, but
he's
going
to ask the county attorney for that brief, and he reported it in a way that makes sense to me in terms of what I know about preemption.
I can encapsulate what my opinion. Although Mark was correct in what he said, it was actually more comprehensive than that. The county attorney found a number of sort of linguistic factors in the law. It wasn't just that one. There's no single silver bullet.
Right.
There's a number of factors that they went through kind of almost on a linguistic basis, and they therefore more or less opined that it was probably preempted. I found a number of flaws in that reasoning, and the broadest flaw that everybody can understand is that when you get involved in a situation like this, when you get involved in something like preemption, it's not going to come down to a sort of a formalistic review of language, such as you were saying. It's going to come down to what's the best thing for the state here, what's the best thing for the state and the municipality. When you look at things that get preempted, like, for example, pesticide regulations or in Suffolk County, or not preempted, It's regulations, for example, on alcohol use, on bars and things like that. It's a sort of thing where there's a fairly clear and compelling statewide, there's a statewide compulsion here that we don't want the municipalities sort of messing it up. For instance, if a municipality started regulating where you could, you know, apply pesticides, for example, or how many. I mean, and use very often there's a technical basis for it, or frankly, there's a moral basis when it comes to something like alcohol consumption, something that where you want some level of uniformity for whatever reason. The real question here is whether the handling of food waste falls into that general thing. And The county attorney never went through that level of analysis on a more policy basis, and so I found the linguistic approach, frankly, uncompelling. You could basically argue it either way, and I'll lay some of that out. But when you look at the fundamentals here of who should be able to ask a business how to handle food waste, for example, is that the sort of thing where you need, you know, technical uniformity, you need the state to do a study, or is it the sort of thing where municipalities can experiment? And I think when you look at the practicalities and the fact that this law is pretty much consistent with statewide policy, unless you want to view the statewide policy as, you know, making sure schools never have to deal with this, which frankly is doesn't make any sense. And there's no, the state never explained that. They never said, we're very concerned about schools and therefore they should never do that. We're very concerned about hospitals, they should never do this. We don't know why they did it. And so it doesn't appear to me that this is any sort of a compelling statewide policy for these exemptions. And the compelling statewide policy appears to be to try to get the ball moving on food waste. And so that's where I come out with differences. And I'll be able to explain that.
Yeah, so I still would like to see it. What you're saying, makes sense to me. But the state was not good on plastic bags in terms of preemption. They put out their law, which seems to me to sort of be parallel to what they have for food waste. And when we went back to them and said, but we can do our thing, they said no initially. And we had to fight really hard to get preemption language into that bill so that the state would let us do other things.
But they specifically did what they wanted. They explained what they were doing in that law.
They did, and they also added in specific preemption language.
If I may clarify, we actually went through the bill very carefully to align it with the state law. So what happens is when the state law goes into effect, those businesses that are generating 2 tons or more and are covered by the state law follow the state law. It's the home rule of adding businesses that generate less than 2 tons in the following years, and also the other two components of healthcare, and so. We learned from what happened with plastic bags, and it was actually Amanda's counsel that got us to take the time to align this law with the state law so that there's a smooth transition.
Is there a
law? Well, I mean, in plastic bags, it was a little different because we didn't have a model state law to align to. You know, theirs came into effect mm-hmm. after ours was in effect. And in fact, the language of preemption, there's a lot of issues with the state law. And the language of preemption is very specific to plastic, and therefore there continues to be an ongoing discussion about where we're at with the renewed recyclable bags and fee. But to not get into the weeds on that, I mean, I think that so much due diligence has been done on this piece of legislation. And when I think about the state legislation, the failure, and I see it as a failure, to include particularly schools in the state legislation is reason enough for me to support our legislation. In the schools, you have the future. You know, you change habits at the ground level. You have kids, we all have seen this, you have kids who go home to their parents and speak to their parents about practice that they've learned about and wondering why their parents aren't doing it. So I don't know why the state chose not to use them and not to include them. And I would suspect it was a level of a lack of courageousness on their part. I mean, the school it's a tough thing, and it's going to take courage to do it here because, as legislator Nolan points out, it's a big thing, but it's the most important thing. So I'm especially concerned that we move this and get this into effect before the state law goes into effect. I know it's passed, but before it goes into effect, because I think we'll have a stronger argument on the preemption issue if we've already passed our law and we're moving. I talked at length to Council Gordon, and I accept the argument that you all get to see in writing. And I think that this committee has done an amazing job with this piece of legislation. You've vetted it every which way. You've had multiple hearings and inclusive, you know, seminars and meetings with stakeholders from every which side. So I'm excited to move this, and I think we will be an example for the state.
Well, I agree that I would like to see all that. My concern is the opening ourselves up to liability, since the state is not including schools. The school districts have made a very, very strong voice in saying that they don't have to do what we tell them to do. So,
well, yes and no. They're complying with styrofoam. We make sure they comply.
But there's other things that my district in particular has had issue with that they have not, like the mental health thing.
Okay. You don't mean on this.
I don't mean on this in particular. Okay.
But
I'm saying
back to the education and compliance issue. Again, it's also in so much of what you talk about, Legislator Warro. You know, it's about how we frame it, and that's again back to what we're talking about with Amanda and her department. You know, when we go out, and we, meaning the county, go out into these schools and educate the schools and recruit the children and have this like program it's not a burden, it's a positive. I mean, that's why it's the bring your own, which wasn't my idea, but it was a great one, why it's the bring your own bag act instead of the ban plastic
right,
bags law. And so again, it's gonna be how we frame it and how we educate even more than getting compliance. I think the education component in this is gonna be really big.
But as a legal issue, are we more vulnerable to having a lawsuit because the state is not including it? Which is not to say I don't want the schools to be included.
Let me characterize. And I think I'm going to be as fair to the county attorneys, I think, as I can. The question here legally is, what does the state's silence mean in a situation like this? The fact that something is not included, does it mean that we can't or we can? Like I said, I think it's going to come down to some of these more policy factors. There is going to be a very credible argument that what we're doing is inconsistent with state. That is preempted. And the county attorney has basically laid that argument out. They basically told us that's what they were doing, was laying out. They want us to see that there is a threat of a credible lawsuit. And that's what they've done. Now, the point that I'm trying to raise, though, is that there is another side to it. There's also an equally credible counter-argument. In fact, I think probably is a little bit better. And so the question for the committee and for the legislature is, given the fact that it's a pretty fair fight, and I think ultimately one that we probably could win, but there's no guarantees whatsoever in an Article. By the way, all we're talking about is an Article 78. So in terms of liability, it's not like there's millions of dollars in liability.
There's no damage.
It'd be overturning the law. So the question for the committee and for the legislature is, given the uncertainty, with all fairness, and the existence of very good linguistic arguments on both sides, do you feel this is important enough to take a step out and give it a shot and possibly lose it at some level? Or are you trying to be very cautious and say our job is to avoid liability and to protect us from even having to go to court? That, again, respectfully, that's the position that's reflected in the county attorney's memo, to the extent that it's viewed as a prediction on what's going to happen. This is essentially the structure of the argument against us. In fact, what the assistant county attorney told to us in the meeting was she was trying to lay out the arguments that would be used against us, and that's what they've done. The message for the committee is that there's an argument on the other side. It's a fair fight. I think, in my opinion, I think it's one that we probably will win, but especially in Supreme Court at the lowest level before it goes to appeal, I think all bets are off, frankly, and you know, that's just the fairest way to look at it. I'm not going to stand here and tell you this is a slam dunk.
Right.
We're going to win it. It's going to be a crapshoot in the Supreme Court. I think as it goes up, as we go higher level and we go to an appellate court and say, Your Honor, this is about what institutions have to do with food waste. Are we going to stick with a 1990s, 1980s, you know, 19th century? Do what you want, throw it out. Or are we going to try to recover that? And do municipalities have a role in crafting that? I think it's a positive argument, and I don't think that's where the county attorney went. But the bottom line is, it's whether you feel this is important enough to take a step forward.
And Amanda, I have a question. So, is the tonnage per building or per district?
It's per building per week.
Okay.
I just want to touch on, I spoke to someone at the DEC who helped, who was through the whole state process, and they said that unlike Ulster County, we know our county, they have to make laws that fit the smallest county in the state and the largest cities, with the exception of New York City, which they actively. So I think we know that in our county, both the healthcare and the schools are already participating. We have a very small number of businesses, especially in the first year. It increases over time, but altogether, I don't remember if it's 150 or 200 businesses in the entire county, and the first year, it's really a handful that are not already participating. Yeah.
So I want this to succeed. I think this is going to be like many of our good laws, where once it's in place, people will go, oh, we should have done this 20 years ago. Is it possible to get an advisory opinion on whether or not it's preempted?
You have two, and they're going to be two different ones.
Are you talking about to the Attorney General's office?
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
going to take.
We actually tried that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't.
They declined? Or
they declined.
And even if they did, it'd just be a third opinion. Ultimately, it's the opinion of the Supreme Court judge.
January 22nd, it's obsolete.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
It comes down to that.
But if I can have opinions from three attorneys rather than two, I will take the three every time.
At some point, you're going to. There will be an energy returns at some point.
Do we feel we need to postpone? I would like to move it forward. I'm talking to the committee. I would like to move it forward because if it is going to go into effect, I want to give people notice in plenty of time so that we could postpone it if.
Well, but our start date is after it's.
The start
filed,
date
right?
is January, but the enforcement date is the end of April. So it gives them 4 months to comply, and it's certainly less than 50 businesses. And I'm sorry, I don't have the chart in front of me, but.
Can I ask a quick question
yeah.
to the council?
Sure.
If it's postponed in December and a new, at the end of the session, so would you have to go back through and have another public hearing in a new session or no?
Oh, if it gets voted on in the new session.
If it's postponed a month
no.
and you're not able to have a public hearing. I mean, I know we just passed
we
one
had,
with
yeah.
economic development, but that was in this session.
Well, we had a public hearing.
Yeah.
I think we
okay.
move forward.
And the formal public hearing on this law, on the state law, is actually the county executive's public hearing. And we've already had ours.
No, I get that you had one, but then there's a brand new legislature.
I wasn't going to postpone it to January. I was thinking of postponing it till December. But it doesn't sound like the committee wants to postpone it. So.
And I just want to say that one reason I was thinking that New York State Attorney General's Office opinion would be helpful is to deal with the issue that Mary's bringing. You know, if there's an Attorney General advisory opinion that this is okay, then the schools are less likely to sue. And, you know, it's even if we're going to win, I just don't like having the school districts sue us. So
right.
it would be
you helpful. Could always write for an opinion, but it would probably take you months, 7 months.
Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't anticipate this.
We
problem.
Did though.
Well, we
I
were
am sure
about
that we reached out to.
Well, we did. What we did was we reached out to DEC for their opinion,
to see if they would. It would have had to go from DEC to the Attorney General.
Well, no, DEC Council. I mean,
DEC's got
to enforce the law. I called DEC Council, and
they said that there's no way we would get an opinion.
I just want to say, I don't love the idea that we're going into great length talking about details about potentially being sued on the record. I mean, it's just between transmitting exactly how someone might do it and then us, you know. The matter of fact is, any piece of legislation, you run the risk of there being a lawsuit or an Article 78, a proceeding. And I think.
You know, I think we just have to have the courage to move forward because it's the right thing to do. You know, we've done all the work here. We're going to have the backup of our council's opinion, you know, and...
The other thing to think about is that if you don't do the law, then you have nothing. I mean, ultimately, it's just a state. If you do it, and if, for instance, if the schools got upset, and even if they filed a lawsuit, you could actually sit down, if you chose, you may not, you could sit down and negotiate. Now you've got something on the table, and you've got something they would have, they have their Article 78, you've got your law, and maybe you'd negotiate a different program for them or whatever they're looking for, a different time frame. And again, I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying the law gives you something to. You've got a table now. You've got a negotiation. Without it, they're just scot-free.
And we and did very, very wide outreach, including the schools, for the public stakeholder. We had a stakeholder meeting before.
There was no schools at that stakeholder meeting, though, right?
No, but they. Yeah. That no, was
but
their
they had the
choice.
Opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Right. Right. Right.
I'm sorry?
You know, I would expect we're going to continue to do outreach because there weren't many in the first pass. I mean, I don't even remember if there were schools in the first group.
Yeah. I don't think there was any
schools.
There
were not many.
I haven't seen
it. I'd be surprised. I mean, our
and even the
jail
right,
with its previous population.
And we saw how well, for example, SUNY New Paltz, within 1 week, the students were...
I only got another 5 minutes.
I'm sorry.
You're about to lose a quorum.
We got
to
go.
Okay.
It's now or never. Let's go.
All right. So on resolution number 444, I'll call the question if people are ready to do so. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. See how easy that was? We just take a vote for 20 minutes ago.
I'm sorry. All right. Let's see. The other two should go more quickly, Brian. Resolution number 447, adopting local law number 9, a local law to improve and strengthen the sustainable energy loan program. And
second.
All right.
Move and second it.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And then resolution number 451, establishing a policy that Ulster County shall be a zero waste community.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That was quick. I was going to ask you to explain it.
And we don't need a quorum to adjourn.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to pass on a Climate Smart update. You already have the solid waste update. So is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The meeting is adjourned.
At some point.
8:10. Eastern Standard Time.